The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
According to the website Officer Down Memorial page, 193 police officers were killed in the line of duty in the United States in 1983. Accidental deaths and duty-related illnesses are among the reasons listed there, but tragically, though perhaps not surprisingly, officers murdered while serving far surpass any other causes. Police killed by gunfire topped the 1983 list at 81 deaths out of the 193. Though Farmers Branch, Texas wasn't exactly a low-crime area in the 1980s, it is, after all, in Dallas County, the murder rate wasn't high, and the slaying of a police officer there was certainly unheard of. In fact, since the Farmers Branch Police Department was formed in the 1950s, an officer had never been killed in the line of duty there. In August of 1983, when Officer Lowell Tribble was gunned down in his patrol car, that fact, unfortunately, changed. And to this day, in February of 2020, Officer Tribble's killer has not been brought to justice. Lowell Clayton Tribble, who'd come to be known to most by his initials LC, was born on January 13, 1945, in Breckenridge, Texas, to parents Florence and Clayton. LC married young in 1963 and welcomed his daughter, Sheila, into the world in 1965, followed by the birth of a son, John, in 1969. He bagged groceries at a local market after his marriage, but when Sheila was born, LC realized that he needed something else, with better pay, to provide for his family, and joined the Bowie, Texas Police Department. LC worked his way up to the small town's police chief remarkably fast, but in 1974, presumably following better pay and better benefits, he took a job as a patrolman 80 miles southeast in the Dallas suburb Farmers Branch. Prior to its incorporation in 1946, Farmers Branch was little more than a rural farming and ranching community nestled between the Elm Fork of the Trinity River to the town's west and White Rock Creek to the east in northwest Dallas County. The population at the time was somewhere around 800, but Farmers Branch grew rapidly after becoming an official, full-fledged city, and by the time LC took a job with the police force in 1974, about 27,000 folks resided in the once sparsely populated area. By the mid-70s, the Dallas suburb had become home to a variety of industry. Everything from steel product manufacturing to cosmetics to a Coca-Cola bottling plant. Manufacturers' choice to set up shop in Farmers Branch wasn't an arbitrary one. Transporting goods via railroad was a convenience many companies still sought, both fiscally and logistically, and the Chicago-Rock Island Line and the Pacific Line went straight through the suburb. LC Tribble and his first wife divorced, and in 1980, he married his second, Frances. The couple welcomed a baby boy into their lives in 1981, Brian. By 1983, LC had been an officer of the law in some capacity for over 15 years, but often worked jobs on the side to provide for his growing family. He worked the late shift as an officer, and he'd work his secondary jobs, usually, after his patrol shift ended. Just after midnight on Saturday, August 27, 1983, 38-year-old patrol officer LC Tribble informed dispatch that he was taking his dinner break. He picked up some medication for his son, 2-year-old Brian, who had the flu, and drove to his home at the London Place Apartments to deliver it. LC took the medicine inside. As he was leaving, his then 18-year-old daughter, Sheila, was returning home. She gave her father hell for his parking job. LC had parked his patrol car carelessly at an angle, taking up two spots. He whispered to her to be quiet because his wife Frances and baby Brian were asleep. "I love you," he told Sheila as he left, continuing to whisper. "I love you too," she responded. Though Sheila was standing at the door as her father left, LC quickly locked the door on his way out. She thought her father was acting preoccupied, and his haste to lock the door as he left seemed a little unusual. It was about 1 a.m. when Patrol Officer L.C. Tribble made his way out into the dark parking lot and climbed into his squad car to go back to work. Just minutes after Sheila had said goodbye to her father as she left the apartment, a series of loud bangs, followed by the sounds of a crash, interrupted the otherwise quiet night. She immediately ran to her window and looked out to see her father's squad car, the red flashing lights of the vehicle reflecting off the complex buildings and the parked cars all around. "Daddy's had a wreck," Frances said to Sheila as she looked outside, the bangs and the crash having woke her. Elsie's patrol car had come to a stop in a drainage ditch just at the edge of the apartment complex, about 100 feet away from his apartment, after plowing through a fence. Frances quickly called the police and told the dispatcher to send Elsie back to the apartment. She'd heard a wreck in the parking lot, she told them, with loud bangs preceding it. Out of the 240 people living in the London Place apartment complex, Elsie's wife was the only one to call police. Frances and Sheila quickly dressed and ran toward Elsie's squad car. As they neared the vehicle, Officer Mark Young was arriving on the scene. As Frances passed Young's car, she heard Officer Down on the police band within. It was the first time, she later said, that she associated gunshot with the loud bangs she'd heard. Officer L.C. Tribble was slumped in his patrol car, his service revolver in hand. An ambulance arrived soon thereafter, and Frances accompanied her husband in the rescue vehicle. Paramedics treating L.C. were having trouble keeping the injured officer breathing. They arrived at the hospital at 2 a.m. At around 5 a.m., a doctor entered the small room where they asked Frances and Sheila to stay and informed them that L.C. was deceased. Frances, facing the earliest stages of grief, couldn't accept that it was her husband who died. "I still couldn't believe it was him," she'd later said. "I don't know how people react to death, but I wanted to make sure it was him." It was, of course, her husband, and the case was cold all but immediately. Beginning in the twilight hours of Saturday, August 27, 1983, investigators immediately began processing the scene where their fellow law enforcement officer had been gunned down. Patrol Officer L.C. Tribble had been shot three times, and although doctors spent hours trying to keep him alive, a bullet crossed his spinal cord, rendering his life unsavable. Elsie's funeral was held at Marsh Lane Baptist Church the following Monday, August 29, 1983, the officer buried just 2 days after his murder at Hilltop Cemetery in Carrollton. Statements from residents of London Place apartment complex, where Elsie lived, made it clear to detectives that there were 4 gunshots in all, which evidence confirmed. It looked like an ambush. A bullet had been shot through the window as he drove, that projectile striking L.C. in the face, and 2 more through the vehicle's door. Another bullet hole was found in the roof of L.C.'s patrol car, fired from his own service revolver, which was still in his hand when he was discovered. 3 spent .45 caliber bullet casings were found at the scene, the only physical evidence there. Several residents of the apartment complex provided authorities with witness statements, reporting 2 men fleeing. One was described as white, with long blonde hair, a blonde mustache, and wearing a straw cowboy hat. The other, black, average height, medium build, with a short afro hairstyle, squared off in the back. The descriptions provided little help and certainly weren't enough to identify a suspect or suspects. Officer Elsie Tribble's wife, Frances, and daughter, Sheila, were subjected to polygraph examinations. Whether and why they killed Elsie were among the questions they were asked. Neither woman, police said, were considered suspects. It was simply standard procedure. Investigators, who had nothing to act on, began looking to Dallas County Jail inmates for rumors or street word about the shooting. The prisoners they found who claimed to have information, detectives said, were blowing smoke. Texas Ranger Ronald McBride, who sifted through his contacts in the criminal underworld for a lead after a $25,000 reward was offered for information leading to Elsie's killer, said, "Those kinds of guys would turn in their friends and cut their mama's throat for that kind of money, but nobody knew much of anything." It's widely known, particularly in Texas, perhaps, that being involved in the killing of an officer of the law will bring with it severe consequences, though, possibly keeping loose-lipped bragging about the crime to a minimum. After approximately 300 individuals were interviewed, either as potential suspects or as witnesses, and more than 100 seized guns were test-fired and the projectiles analyzed, the police, they said, had nothing. They'd followed leads across Texas and into neighboring states, Arkansas and Oklahoma, but not a thing panned out. Authorities believed, they said, for reasons not expounded upon, that the execution of Officer Elsie Tribble was likely connected to, quote, an alleged stolen car and illegal drugs. The case seemed to go cold from the get-go, and by 1984, various law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, all but confirmed they had no leads at all. "If we had a motive, we'd have found a suspect. We're still looking for the right key to open the door," a Farmers Branch police captain said, while Dallas County Sheriff's Department Captain Gus Rose commented, "We've gone full circle and are back at square one. Any lead has dried up." Elsie's family had thoughts of their own on the investigation, some of which carried starkly conspiratorial implications that were echoed by others in law enforcement. The family believed that the Farmers Branch police dragged their feet on the investigation, saying that the department should have brought in outside agencies much sooner than they did. Elsie's prior activities as a union organizer, they said, was a factor in the investigative efforts. "Tribble was a pain to the city of Farmers Branch," president of the Combined Law Enforcement Agencies of Texas, Ron DeLord, said. DeLord represented Elsie in a federal lawsuit against Farmers Branch after the officer was fired from the police department for reasons undisclosed. Since Elsie Tribble's reinstatement on the force, he'd began organizing a police union in Farmers Branch. The matter of Elsie's reinstatement had only been settled a few weeks before he was gunned down. Farmers Branch Police Chief Roger Robbins said that Elsie's union activities had been investigated, seeking a motive for his murder, but that nothing came up. He and City Manager Paul West refused to comment further on that line of investigation, the union activities, the lawsuit, or the family's allegations. Elsie's brother, Larry, pointed out the glaring conflict of interest in the Farmers Branch police investigating that particular avenue.
"My brother caused them a lot of problems that ended when he was shot," he said.
Larry sent a letter to then-President Ronald Reagan asking that the Justice Department enter the investigation into his brother's ambush and murder. Virtually nothing about Elsie's slaying came into the eye of the public for nearly 10 years, and when the case finally made news again in 1993, it came in the form of an anniversary story rather than an announcement of movement. Farmers Branch Police had a new chief by then, Jimmy Fawcett, who couldn't provide any updates in the case. Though calls claiming information were still coming in, he said, even from out of state, the department was no closer to solving the case than they were in the beginning. No dust had been allowed to settle on the case file, and it sat on desks and never in a filing cabinet. Many fresh eyes had gazed the case's 3-inch thick file, Chief Fawcett added, as several new lead investigators were assigned the case over the years. Not only his detectives, Chief Fawcett said, but also investigators from outside agencies. Again, Officer L.C. Tribble's case disappeared into media obscurity until finally appearing in the papers again in 2008. Farmers Branch Police Chief Sid Fuller, who'd stepped into the title 2 years earlier, had little more to say than his predecessors. "It's frustrating," he said, assuring, though, that the department has never stopped investigating. Little did Chief Fuller know that 2 years later, in 2010, Officer Lowell Clayton Tribble's murder would come closer than ever to a resolution. In 2010, after receiving a tip about the 1983 shooting death of Officer L.C. Tribble, Dallas County District Attorney Craig Watkins reopened the case. With that announcement, and in contrast to what they had maintained to the press for nearly 30 years, authorities also revealed that they'd had a suspect the whole time, someone a witness placed at the scene of L.C.'s murder. The tip law enforcement received in 2010 led them to a pond that summer on the 6700 block of North Haven Road in North Dallas. What they were diving for there was evidence related to L.C.'s slaying, they said, and could, quote, break the case wide open. The muddy pond wasn't easy to search, but after 2 attempts, authorities said, the search was thorough. What they found there, or what they didn't find, was never expounded upon. Whether anything was found or not wasn't the biggest news in the case that summer, since 27 years to the day after Officer L.C. Tribble was gunned down in his squad car on Friday, August 27, 1983, an arrest was made. 63-year-old Fort Worth man Gary Wayne Pettigrew was arrested as he was being discharged from a hospital there and charged with L.C.'s murder. Pettigrew was no stranger to law enforcement. His record began in 1969, and his latest black mark was in 2006. He'd been locked up over the years for DWIs, thefts, burglaries, auto theft, possession and delivery of a controlled substance, among other strikes. Pettigrew's lawyer, Jim Shaw, made it clear that he was unhappy about the circumstances of the arrest. The man had had several heart attacks and a stroke in recent weeks, the attorney told the press, and was taken out of the Fort Worth Hospital's cardiac unit against the advice of doctors.
They took the tubes out of his arm and said, "We're taking him to Dallas," Shaw said.
Authorities refused to comment on a motive or on Pettigrew's specific role in L.C.'s murder, saying only that he and the fallen officer had no relationship and that they would make no further arrests. The trial was scheduled for April 18, 2011, and the prosecutors, in the meantime, offered Pettigrew a plea deal. Though District Attorney Watkins told the press Pettigrew reacted to his arrest without surprise, as if he expected it to come someday, Pettigrew declined the plea deals offered him, saying he was innocent. The 63-year-old was surprised, he said, but didn't think he'd be detained for long.
"I never thought this case would make it this far because there ain't no evidence," Pettigrew said. "There can't be none. There ain't gonna be none."
In 1983, police questioned Pettigrew about L.C.'s murder, and over the years, multiple times, questioned him again. He said he was at a motel in Farmers Branch doing a dope deal the night Officer L.C. Tribble was slain, stopped by a pool hall he often went to afterward, and never encountered the officer. While jailed in Dallas County upon his 2010 arrest and murder charge, he told a reporter,
"I think whoever done that to that policeman needs to be strung up by his heels, but it ain't me. I never killed nobody in my life. I swear to God I haven't. I don't know why they would say something like that."
According to Pettigrew and his daughter, he'd passed two polygraph exams and gave investigators DNA 9 years prior to his 2010 arrest. The family of Officer L.C. Tribble, though, wasn't buying what they perceived as Pettigrew's act. L.C.'s daughter, Sheila, who was 45 years old at the time, doubted that the man was plucked from random. "There had to be a reason he was arrested and charged," she said. Frances, L.C.'s widow, scrutinized Pettigrew's body language, insisting that he was lying as he said he never killed anyone. Besides, she said, the pool hall Pettigrew claimed to have visited that night, Rusty's pool hall, never even existed. Frances had prepared a victim impact speech to read in court 25 years ago, she said, and looked forward to facing her husband's murderer to read it. Sheila told reporters that she was relieved her father's killer was finally being brought to justice. The death of her father, still an open wound after over a quarter century had gone by, she expressed her desire that the accused man be sentenced to death for his crime.
"He's lived long enough to enjoy what my dad missed out on," Sheila said. "If you'd asked me when I was younger, I would have said I wanted to kill him myself."
The district attorney's office commented that a decision on what penalty they would seek had not been made. Justice for Officer Lowell Clayton Tribble seemed to be on the horizon. However, just before Pettigrew was set to be tried, the case was dismissed. The spokesperson for the Dallas District Attorney's Office told the media the dismissal was, quote, "the right thing to do in the interest of justice." District Attorney Craig Watkins was up for re-election in 2010. He wasn't popular in city government, or at the very least, his ethics and methods were seen as questionable by many. Watkins, upon his first term as district attorney and into his second term, allegedly demanded those in his office pledge political loyalty to him and is accused of firing those who differed in political persuasion or even mingled with the rival party. His 2010 re-election wasn't imminent. The race was going to be close. The indictment and prospective prosecution of an alleged cop killer, though, certainly wouldn't hurt an incumbent district attorney's chance at re-election. When District Judge Jim Snipes dismissed the case against Gary Wayne Pettigrew, Elsie's family was shocked. Though the judge declined to give specifics during the dismissal, Pettigrew's attorney, Paul Johnson, had no problem telling the press just what had transpired. The witness who placed Pettigrew at the scene of Officer L.C. Tribble's murder hadn't been on the scene at all, according to another witness, determined to be much more credible. Another individual, not Pettigrew, the credible witness told authorities, had confessed to the murder. Not long after his arrest, when interviewed by a Dallas Morning News reporter, Pettigrew said he knew who his accuser was and that the man was in trouble and looking for a way out. Though he wouldn't give a name, Pettigrew's defense attorney backed him up.
"They did not have any more evidence than they did before, except a guy who told them something that wasn't credible, a convict trying to knock some time off."
The district attorney's office refused to comment further on why the case was dismissed, or the shaky evidence that led to the charges in the first place. Gary Wayne Pettigrew wasn't let go upon the dismissal, as he had pending drug charges in Tarrant County. Even though he faced life in prison for the drug charges alone, and likely another life sentence or death penalty if he'd been tried and convicted of killing L.C., District Attorney Watkins was offering Pettigrew a 2-year prison sentence for the drug charges and for the murder of a police officer, if only he'd confess to killing L.C., Pettigrew's family told a reporter. His family had been working to clear his name, admitting that he was far from perfect, but refusing to believe that he'd ever killed anyone. The ordeal devastated the man's daughter, and his girlfriend told the press that District Attorney Craig Watkins used people's lives in any way he sees fit to benefit his career. Meanwhile, LC's family felt that the Dallas District Attorney was, quote, yanking us around like a yo-yo. LC's daughter, Sheila, said prosecutors never mentioned the 2-year plea to her or her family. The DA made the case a huge deal, she said, and then brushed them off.
Oh, we got him. No, we don't. I think Watkins used us to get reelected. He's either real stupid or real sneaky,
Sheila told reporters, frustrated that she and her family had been dragged back through the painful memories and given hope for justice, only to be let down. Though the DA's office claimed to be forthcoming and communicative with Elsie's family, Sheila said they were not contacted when it was decided the case would be dismissed, nor were they contacted pertaining to where the investigation goes from there.
I still don't know who is taking it over or what they are doing with it, Sheila said. It's still unsolved.
Lowell Clayton Tribble is the only Farmers Branch police officer to be killed in the line of duty. His patrol car wasn't retired until about 2 years after his death and served as a reminder of the unsolved murder of a fellow officer to those who used it. To this day, LC's slang evokes an emotional, tearful response in the first responding officer, Mark Young, now Deputy Chief of Police. A memorial stands in front of the Farmers Branch Justice Center for the fallen officer, and his picture hangs on the wall within. A private drive in the Justice Center's complex bears LC's name.
We're carrying the loss of a friend, and additionally, the murder of a police officer,
former Farmers Branch Police Chief Jimmy Fawcett commented.
It's never out of the minds of any of us here.
The fact that the case is unsolved is particularly disheartening to the department. It's unclear whether LC's union activities continued to be considered beyond the initial investigation.
They took away a good man,
LC's daughter, Sheila, said of her father's murderer. That fact particularly painful when considering the grandfather her grandchildren never knew, one of them named after the man.
It still hurts, she added. I can still think about that night and cry. I can remember dropping to my knees when I heard he died.
If you have any information on the murder of Officer Lowell Clayton Tribble, please contact North Texas Crime Stoppers at 877-373-8477. The Dallas Morning News, the Tyler Morning Telegraph, the Texarkana Gazette, TheGuardian.com, TSHAOnline.org, WFAA.com, and LubbockOnline.com were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to become a supporter of Gone Cold, you can do so at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.